This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Suicide is a topic that hides in the shadows. It's time we talk away the dark, learn how to spot the warning signs for suicide, and how you can have an open, caring, real conversation to help save lives. Visit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to watch the new short film and learn more at afsp.org/talkawaythedark. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Ravinia, with over 100 concerts under the stars this summer, including Daryl Hall and Elvis Costello, Nora Jones with special guest Mavis Staples, The Beach Boys with special guest John Stamos, Shaggy and TLC, Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and more. Their 30-acre park is nestled in a gently wooded area. Bring your own picnic or eat at one of the park restaurants. Tickets available now only at ravinia.org.
A loving Black family led by a two-parent household. This was the reality for a majority of Black families many years ago, but it wasn't something you'd see depicted on the television screen. That is, not until 1974, when a sitcom called Good Times made its debut. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset.
Tonight we are having fresh collard greens, chitlins, sweet potatoes, cornbread with butter, and pork chops.
Hey, that's a Sunday meal. What'd you do, hijack a supermarket, girl?
Oh, James, this little bit of food ain't gonna put us no closer to the soup line than we already are.
You ain't wrong. Getting it closer to it would be in the pot.
That's one of many funny scenes in Good Times. The show depicted a family making ends meet in Chicago's Cabrini-Green housing development. Its co-creator, Chicagoan Eric Monty, quickly became known as the godfather of sitcom. He was also the force behind a series of other hits, including The Jeffersons and What's Happening. I sat down with a panel of guests to mark Good Times' 50th anniversary. Natalie Moore is a WBEZ Race, Class, and Communities editor. Ariane Nettles is a journalism professor at Northwestern University and author of We Are the Culture, Black Chicago's Influence on Everything. She recently wrote a piece for the Sun-Times reviewing a new Good Times animated series on Netflix. And Cynthia Crisp is the daughter of Eric Monty, who created Good Times. Cynthia starts with what made the show so popular.
I think it was because people were hungry to see African-American family sitcom. That was the first African-American all-family sitcom on national TV.
Yeah,
my father, he fought a battle for about 2 years to get a Black father on that show. And he was constantly told that the world's not ready for a strong Black male figure like that. But what we didn't realize, what they didn't realize after it aired, that they were not just ready for it. They were hungry for it. Mm-hmm. So it spoke to a lot of people who look like us to see themselves on the big screen, which was what my father wanted.
You grew up in Cabrini-Green in public housing with your family. You later moved to Inglewood. What was your childhood like, Cynthia? How did it feel seeing, you know, your childhood really kind of playing out on screen?
It was amazing to see my father. So the story of Good Times and of Cooley High was prior to before I was born. But watching it, being a child in that situation where my mother lived in Cabrini Greens, my father had left Cabrini Greens and hitchhiked to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And then when he did make Good Times and he made it, he did what he promised. He took us out. So it was a fairy tale. When at nine, when you're living in the projects in poverty with seven kids, a mother on welfare, and then to be thrust into Hollywood and glamour, it was a fairy tale, to say the least. So that's how it was in the beginning to see, to just and hear people say, you know, you're Eric's daughter or Eric Monte, hear your father and people praising him. So it was a fairy tale experience, to say the least, in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of being born and raised in Chicago, I'm going to turn to you, Natalie, because that's your story, right, as well. What did Good Times mean to you growing up? Did your family watch?
Well, I was not born when Good Times came
out. Did your family watch?
But it was in syndication. So in the 80s, like everybody, it was very present, mm-hmm. even after it had gone off the air. And as a kid, I didn't realize that it was off the air that I was watching these reruns.
Right.
So, yeah, we watched it. I don't know if we watched it as a family because it wasn't appointment TV the way The Cosby Show was or Family Ties or some of these other shows. It was like you catch it when you catch it, and it might be after school yes. when you're watching it. So we were allowed to watch it, but I remember my mother saying not to watch it anymore. And this was after JJ became really the focus, after John Amos, who played the father, mm-hmm. James Evans left. And, you know, JJ was a little bit of a lightning rod when we were in the 1980s when images of African-Americans on television came up. JJ was the one who was like, oh, he's coonish. Oh, he's this. I don't know if we, I mean, I feel like I've seen most episodes.
He was like the goofball on the show.
And it was, I think at the time it was seen, he was a goofball in the early years, but then I think the storyline started centering around him and those goofy attributes became more exaggerated.
Yeah.
And it took away from the political nature of the show.
Yeah. Ariane, as I mentioned, we are marking 50 years since the show originally yes. debuted. It lasted 6 whole seasons. Why is this an important moment in history?
So this is an important moment because right now I think we are starting to reflect and think back on television history, especially Black TV, what it has meant to our future. And I think that we are really thinking about what we want current Black TV shows to reflect and what we want them to represent. Mm-hmm. Even though it's 50 years later, we're still fighting for representation. There's still, you know, we may start to have more Black television shows. They don't always last very long. You know, a lot of them don't.
A season or two seasons.
And, you know, after this large boom in an increase of shows due to streaming, now we're starting to see networks pull back and, you know, green light less shows. So yeah. we know that coming up, we're going to be seeing less Black television shows on TV. And so the ones that do make it, the heaviness, the weight of what people are expecting of them is increasing.
Feels like a win for us all too, right?
Yeah.
Having a show last that long.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Suicide is a topic that hides in the shadows. It's time we talk away the dark, learn how to spot the warning signs for suicide, and how you can have an open, caring, real conversation to help save lives. Visit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to watch the new short film and learn more at afsp.org/talkawaythedark. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Ravinia, with over 100 concerts under the stars this summer, including Daryl Hall and Elvis Costello, Norah Jones with special guest Mavis Staples, The Beach Boys with special guest John Stamos, Shaggy and TLC, Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and more. Their 30-acre park is nestled in a gently wooded area. Bring your own picnic or eat at one of the park restaurants. Tickets available now only at ravinia.org.
What should we know, Cynthia, about your father, Eric Monty? What should we know about him? As I said earlier, he's been called the godfather of sitcom.
Well, as you know, my father's 80 now, and he's recently relocated from Hollywood to Atlanta to live with me. Mm-hmm. And I could say my father was writing and TV and art was his passion. It's always been his passion, and he took a lot of pride in his work. But it was a bittersweet experience for him. Be sweet because he got a chance to fulfill his dreams. He got a chance to do what he always said, as Preach did in the movie Cooley High. He always said, I'm going to go to Hollywood and become a famous writer.
Right.
That's why he was named or deemed Preach. And so he was able to realize that dream. And he took a lot of pride in it. And he did it because he wanted to see people that look like us like heroes. To be heroes and not in, he hated the buffoonery. He hated buffoonery, coonish, that's what he called it, the shucking and jiving. He hated that. Mm. And he wanted to see positive Black images. So the opportunity, the dream come true to do that, So that was a thing. And then he wanted to, we came for Cabrini Green. We were in the projects, but he wanted to show that even people that live in the projects in poverty, we're normal people. We could be happy. My father enjoyed his childhood. And he shows that in Good Times and in the movie Coolie High.
Right.
He shows that he had fun as a teenager. We're regular people.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things. But so that was the sweetness of it. The bitter part was that after he did the works that he did,
yeah,
he was blacklisted. He could never work again.
Yeah, talk about that, because there was a lawsuit that's well documented.
Yes. So in doing that, that taking away a man's ability to earn is emasculating them. It's like cutting off his manhood. So he was never allowed to write again. And I think it was a lot of bitterness, and he spent the rest of his career fighting and instead of creating and building.
Yeah.
And it could, if he was allowed to continue, he has so many works on his computer and so many things he wanted to do. He could have been the first Tyler Perry studio, you know, but the opportunity to build and create more works like we see other artists is able to do, to continue to work, that left a really bitter, he was bitter for many years, angry. And so watching him come in mad and angry, that was as a child, you know, and so it taught me a lot. So it was a bittersweet career.
That's
for
tough.
Him.
Listening to that, Ariane and Natalie, I mean, you're both here with me, you're creatives, you're writers of books and plays. What does Eric Monte and the Good Times backstory teach you then about navigating these industries and trying to do it successfully? You first, Natalie.
I have not tried to go to Hollywood because it seems like, well, not that I have anything to send to Hollywood, but
not yet.
But it, I know that it's hard. I know that it's dogged, and what kind of voices do they want? You know, it's so out the realm of possibility in some ways, because I think about, what do you have to do to compromise to get your work? What do you have to conform to? What can be authentic? And I think that there should be a diversity of Black stories and voices that have class diversity and experience diversity. So, you know, hearing this, it's just more confirmation of what I think some of us already know about the industry and how hard it is, and how Black art, how the Black people behind the Black art are really valued.
Mm-hmm. Ariane, your thoughts?
Yeah. It also, though, does make me like really appreciative of the people and the creatives, you know, like Eric Monte, who came before us, because, you know, there would probably be Tyler Perry if it weren't for other Black creatives who kind of helped knock down so many of those barriers.
Yeah. No Shonda Rhimes, no
Issa
Rae.
Yeah. You know? So we know that those barriers still exist, and you know, it's scary. And I applaud all those people who still are doing that really tough, difficult work in Hollywood. It's still reminds me that, like, wow, people were doing so much 50 years ago without, you know, as many resources as we are starting to build now, without as many coalitions and groups. And yeah, it's just so admirable. And so we just, you know, I try to look back and be thankful for people who kind of started paving that way.
So as we mark 50 years since the debut, there's a new animated series of the same name. It just launched on Netflix. It's being billed as a reboot of the old sitcom.
I have important news.
Let me guess. The state called and they want to cut you a disability check for your face.
Hold up. You can get paid for that?
This is from a fool who stares at his orange juice every morning.
It says concentrate on the box. Who the dummy now? Me for not wearing a condom.
So, Cynthia, when the trailer dropped about a month ago, I noticed an immediate outpouring of outrage on social media. How do you feel about the series?
The same way a lot of fans feel. First, when I first heard it and saw it, it was unbelief, because my father was not contacted, consulted, included, paid, or anything like that. But then when I found out about the story content, that there's a drug addict baby, someone who's supposed to be a stripper, just the whole concept of it. It was inflammatory. It was so degrading. It was so insulting. It was racist, so stereotypical, so against everything my father stood for, as far as the buffoonery, the stereotypical negative imagery, which he was really big on.
Yeah.
It was, it was angering. Yeah. I was angry about it, and I hated it.
I can only imagine. Here's a short statement from your father, Eric Monty. He's also reacting to the content in the show. It reads, quote, "I didn't have to kill people to be funny. I read books and poetry and still was funny. I was cool. This reboot is not cool or funny," end quote. Ariane, you wrote a review for this in the Sun Times.
Yeah.
Quickly give us your take.
The creators said that they want it to be as, you know, I guess shocking as they are, you know? And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about animated series like The Boondocks and Family Guy and things that are kind of like satirical in nature and have those kind of jokes. But I think the thing is that you really have to think about your audience and if they're ready. And so many of the stereotypes that the jokes were built on, me as a viewer particularly, so I can't speak for everybody, but I am not in a position to think that's funny. So, for example, there are several scenes where there's just like bullets are raining, like there are just shootouts. I can't think that's funny. Like, I've seen the effects of gun violence up close. I've seen people I love bleed out. Like, it's not a joke for me. Like, I've seen it. I can't get those images out of my head.
Yeah.
So to then watch a cartoon, it can't, or animated show, even for adults, it can't, that can't be funny for me.
Right.
And the show did have some bright spots where I would be watching and I'm like, oh, well, maybe they're going to move away from that. Maybe they just started with that and then it would go back to those dark places. Mm-mm. But it was actually at its best when it was kind of, you know, more imaginative.
Right.
But then it would go right back to those stereotypes, which I think it really did not have to do. It could have created something different, but the creators said they wanted to do that, right? Yeah. So they said that was intentional, and maybe if people don't in the audience don't have those types of traumas, maybe if they could think of things that were funny, you know, the drug dealing baby. Initially, I thought maybe they were trying to do kind of like a Bebe's Kids type of humor, but even in that movie, right, we knew that, like, why was, you know, those kids in that movie sad? Well, they were sad or they acted out because their mom wasn't around and they didn't really have any attention, right?
Listen, I couldn't last 10 minutes in the first episode. It was that appalling. But I'm almost out of time. Cynthia, I want to just end with you here because Cabrini Green's now gone. It's been replaced by, you know, mixed income housing, retail developments. This reboot, you know, you're saying it tarnished what your father started. Your family's carrying on the legacy, though. So just briefly tell us about Eric Monty Productions and maybe something we should look out for.
So we want to get away from the negative narrative. We want to definitely build and create positive, uplifting, unified. You never see us unified. So we have projects, some of my father's projects that's been sitting collecting dust on his computer, some from us ourselves. We are writers. And so we have projects that we are working on, short films, going to the film festival, continuation of our lives. After Eric's life, after he left Cabrini Greens and went to Hollywood, our lives and how that affected us, just leaving the projects and moving on up to Hollywood. So there's a lot of story there, a lot of history there. My father, he's a Black iconic history figure. He is a part of history. He's been honored by the NBA G League out here in Georgia. They gave him a day in Stonecrest to be like Eric Monte's day, like Martin Luther King's day.
Oh, incredible.
So it's March 17. So
the legacy lives on.
Yes.
Yeah. We've been speaking with Cynthia Crisp, who's CEO of Eric Monte Productions, WBEZ's Natalie Moore, and Northwestern University journalism professor Ariane Nettles. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha, for having us.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by me. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations like this one, head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Talk to you later today.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.